This is a talk given by Lumpo Liam here at Abhayagiri in 2009. I'd like to thank Ten Kovilo for help with the Pali. Everybody here has come based on their interest and desire to practice Dhamma. Coming together like this is an important act of sharing, fostering and nurturing our knowledge and understanding with regard to how we are developing and cultivating our lives. Because we all understand and know that this life has a limited time span, and what we are keen to do is to live a life which is of maximum benefit. So we understand the passing of time with regard to the body. We see that the body has a limited time span, and we work within the framework available to us. So gathering here like this today is a way of supporting one another. We've come together in the evening when the darkness begins to shroud the area, and this is a very appropriate time to come and practice Dhamma because it's quiet and peaceful and we can experience nature. We are studying and training our minds in a way that gives rise to peace and a feeling of coolness, and for that we have to have right understanding as a foundation. We have to understand our lives. One way of looking at our life is to divide it into two general aspects. The first you could call the coarse aspect. This aspect of life is bound up with a physical body, with matter. We have this body, it's what we call a rupa dharma. It is made up of physical matter. If we don't understand the nature of the body and the nature of the material world, and if we don't develop this understanding by studying dharma, by meeting, discussing and supporting each other, then the material world and the physical body can give rise to great attachment, intoxication and heedless behavior. And all kinds of heedless behaviors are the source of our difficulties and those aspects of our lives which are not peaceful. It gives rise to dukkha or suffering. The other aspect of our life is that which we call the mental realm. We have to understand what is meant by mental health or by making the mind healthy. The mind has no external physical form. There's no body to it. It doesn't express itself like the body does in terms of tall, short, black or white. The mind is abstract, but it gives rise to all our feelings of discomfort, of dis-ease, because the mind has a certain power, a certain strength. In Dhamma, we say that the mind is the leader. The very famous verse of the Buddha, Mano Pubangama Dhamma, Mano Seta Mana, Mano Maya. This means mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is the chief. So any time the mind is bound up with states which are dangerous or harmful, then straight away this will lead to our suffering. What we have to do is to learn how to adapt, train and improve the mind in order that it is of true benefit in our lives and leads us to the state of peace and coolness. This means we have to develop right understanding or right view. It takes quite a lot of studying and training in order to bring the mind to its natural state of balance. But an important aspect in being free from worry is to put down concerns for the past and concerns for the future, to allow the mind to rest in its natural state of present awareness. And in order for this self-understanding to arise, we need a certain stillness as a foundation. For this stillness to arise, we have to undergo a certain process which you could compare to what might be done to improve water, which is one aspect of the physical world. The water element exists in the world, but in order to be of true and safe benefit for us, we have to filter, clean and purify our water so that it's free from any poisons, toxins or chemical dangers. And in order to use it in a way that is of benefit, we have to filter it. So with Dharma practice, we learn to filter and purify our own minds, although it's not something that we can hold on to in any physical way, because the mind doesn't express itself physically or materially. There are two aspects of the mind. You can call it good and bad. That which we call good is the mind which is wholesome, radiant, luminous, and bright. When the mind is wholesome, then naturally it will incline towards friendship with one another and harmony based on spiritual values. The mind which is unwholesome or bad is a mind which feels hot and agitated and will naturally give rise to enmity. This is how we can take up and study the mind and see things as they really are. But first, we need a certain foundation and firmness. We need a minimum amount of patient endurance. In life, we all have a certain amount just in daily life. The nature of life means we do have to endure and bear things. We have to increase our capacity for this. So we learn to look and investigate deeply the nature of our lives and our minds. Then whatever we consider to be unwholesome, anything that gives rise to negativity, that we mustn't foster or encourage, and anything that is beneficial, we train to increase it. Our teachers have always trained us to stop and bear with our mental states, rather than simply acting in line with our moods and desires. Anything that's unwholesome, anything that's dangerous or harmful, or not universally accepted by society, we call akusala, unwholesome. That we have to abandon. So in spiritual life, there are certain ideals or principles that we have to live up to, such as the phrase to abandon all that's unwholesome, or not to do anything that is blameworthy. We realize in time we have to abandon the unwholesome because it simply brings suffering to ourselves and to society. We see that anything in life which is hot and bothered, anything which is agitating, all of this will come from a state of mind which is lacking in spiritual values. So we learn to develop the opposite, the wholesome. And what we call wholesome is a mind and mental states which are free from greed, free from hatred, and free from delusion. Anytime we experience a mind free from these states, this will lead to peace and coolness. Whether we're standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, the mind will always be happy. A mind that is happy naturally gives rise to friendship and warmth, metta and loving kindness, mutual support and tolerance. All of these things come from a pure mind. So the Buddha and all our Kuruba Ajahns and the enlightened masters of the past have always stressed the fact that we are born in this human form, something that has been called the Manusa realm. Manusa means the true human being, a being with a high mind. What Manusa means, a human being means, is that we all have the capacity to train our minds. Our minds are of true quality. You could compare our mind to the natural resources that we find in the earth, like minerals and elements. We can adapt and use this, harness them in order to derive comfort and benefit for our lives. So in the same way, the Buddha praised the state of being born as a human being. He said, Kicho Manusa Patilabo. This means hard to find, or of great gain, is that human birth. And the highest happiness that we are seeking, the highest happiness that we can find, actually derives from the fact that we have taken this human birth. We have the capacity then to walk in the footsteps of our forefathers, who in the past have developed themselves to the highest spiritual capacity, which is to go beyond dukkha, to completely eliminate suffering. We are all capable of this. We have everything that we need within us in order to realize the highest spiritual fruits. But our success will ride upon our capacity to put forth effort into the practice. We all have the peace that we are seeking within us. Developing and improving, working on our lives, has to be based on a clear principle of letting go. Coming together and meeting like this is beneficial. We meet together and support each other to move away from worries and anxieties. To sit here, we let go and relax. Sitting here out in the open is something which gives rise to non-attachment. It helps us let go of the attachments which usually make our minds not peaceful. Because whenever the mind is attached or there's feelings of clinging, then the mind is not free. Sitting out in the open air, one thing we see is that we don't have any special rights or privileges over nature. So we just have to let go and surrender to nature and not be concerned by anything. When the mind is free from concerns, we can then turn our attention to the body and take up the meditation object of the body for our contemplation. This is called kaya gata sati, mindfulness of the body, or literally, mindfulness gone to the body. We can contemplate and investigate the body. Through doing this, we begin to understand very clearly that we don't own our bodies. We don't have any rights or control over our body. In just the same way that a geologist might investigate rocks or an astronomer investigates and studies the stars so that their understanding about rocks and the universe grows, so too we look at the body and our understanding grows. We learn to divide up and analyze the body in its various aspects, its various forms, various parts. This is a practice which gives rise to letting go. We see that in the body there is hair of the head, hair of the body, nails, teeth and skin. And if we see ourselves in this way, in this light, then this gives rise to the abandoning of thoughts and opinions bound up with conceit and self-view, thoughts of delighting and aversion, or thoughts of us and them. We see the body as just a body. There's no one there. Just elements arising and passing in line with nature. There's no being, no soul, no essence, no individual. In time, this will give rise to a way of thinking which is very different from the way of the world. In the way of the world, people are constantly bound up with itta-ramana and the anitta-ramana. The itta-ramana is a mind which is delighting and happy and seeking satisfaction in things. The anitta-ramana is the mind of aversion, the mind which isn't happy, the mind which rejects things. This delight and aversion, these are states which bind up and obscure the mind. So we're training ourselves to abandon desire and craving. We have these bodies, so we learn to develop the seclusion of the body or aloofness from the body, peace with regard to the body, to see it as not us and not ours, to see it just as an aspect of nature. And when we see ourselves as nature, we understand that there are certain laws in nature and that nature is just doing its job in line with its laws. Everything in nature arises, remains for a while, and then passes away. In Pali, we call this upada titi ambanga. When we see this, it leads to a mind which is able to let go. We see the body as it really is, and as a result, the mind will be aloof or secluded from the body. We call this kaya viveka. Then naturally this gives rise to a mind which itself is secluded. It is secluded and aloof from thoughts and moods. The mind will be still. There will be no more negativity. Thoughts bound up with greed, hatred and delusion will disappear. The mind which is aloof and secluded will be peaceful and cool. If there's seclusion from the body, the mind will be peaceful and then ease, true ease will arise. And the mind will no longer be confused and chaotic. Then a true happiness arises, a happiness which is not false, not transient. So as Dharma practitioners, we have to learn to let go. With this, we need sati, or mindfulness, as a supporting cause and condition in the way we lead our lives. We have to develop a sense of contentment, the mind which feels a sense of enough, a feeling of being full and satisfied. So this is the mind which is wholesome, and this sense of true contentment is the highest spiritual quality of a human being, the mind which is aloof and peaceful. When we experience this true peace of mind, then we will be free from all doubts regarding spiritual practice. This freedom from doubts arises when the mind is peaceful. The body and the mind will be peaceful because there will be no feelings arising from unwholesome states. Feeling or vedana is something that we have to understand. It's an aspect of the mind. We can speak of sukha vedana and dukkha vedana, pleasant feelings and unpleasant feelings, somanasa and domanasa, happiness and grief. And when the mind is peaceful, these kinds of feelings won't arise. Happiness and suffering, delight and grief, they just disappear. Just like when we become adults, we lose our interest in our toys. A child likes toys because he thinks these toys are of benefit, that they're really useful. In time, when we practice Dhamma, we'll see that sukha vedana and dukkha vedana, feelings of delight and suffering, these are like the toys of the unenlightened mind. In time, we see that they're of no true value. With wisdom, we'll see that both happiness and suffering, they're not us. They just arise and pass away, and we'll see them as mental states that actually block our path to freedom. The mind will incline away from these things which bind us up. covetousness and grief, delight and aversion. These are things that are like a snare, a bond. And with mindfulness and clear comprehension, we learn to see the feelings in the mind as just feeling. Vedana is Vedana. It's not us. It's not ours. It's just aspects or elements of Dhamma or nature. And we'll understand that all feelings arise with contact through our sense bases, what we call our ayatana, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. So we train ourselves that when the eye sees form, the ear hears sound, the nose smells, the tongue tastes, the body feels touches and the mind has thoughts. We see it all as an empty process. It's just contact, eye experiencing forms, just contact. So no desire arises on account of it. And so when the eye sees something, the mind doesn't get hot and agitated, and the ear, nose, tongue, body, etc. As a result, we'll feel light and not heavy. This is something we all want, isn't it? Lightness and ease in our lives. So this is the freedom of the Samana, the peaceful one. Samana nancha dasanang, experiencing that which is peaceful. This is something which is incomparable in the world. So with mindfulness and true awareness, we begin to see life in line with reality. But seeing this way means really looking and really understanding in line with the truth of nature. The Buddha said, "Yo Dhamma Pasadi, Yo Bhagavatam Pasadi." One who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. To see the Buddha, to truly see the Buddha, you have to see the Dhamma. This is something which we all have the capacity for. This is the highest goal that a human being can realize. And as a result, all negativity in the world ends for one who sees the Dhamma. So cultivating and training our habits and tendencies so that these Dhammas or states of mind which are of benefit to us and others arise, what we need is to carry out what's called action, or to live a life which is correct in all four postures, by having mindfulness in all four postures, whether standing, walking, sitting, or lying down. We learn to develop self-knowledge, to be one who knows oneself rather than getting lost in our own moods and thoughts, or what we call loka, which means the world, or the ways of thinking which are bound up with the worldly ways. We cultivate a mind which is letting go, a mind of emptiness, a mind which is not bound up, not attached. The mind which is attached is never free. So contemplating and developing the mind which has letting go as its characteristic, this is like a meditation practice. This is our kamatana. In daily life, even something as ordinary as wearing our clothing, our robes, we can do it in a way where we are abandoning, letting go, rather than allowing desire to arise in the mind. We can look at our robes as what we call bangsakula, rags, refuse robes, abandoned. Anything in the material world we can look at in the same way. It's not intrinsically clean. There's nothing intrinsically desirable. And as a result, this constant delight and getting lost and seeking fun and pleasure, these kinds of states won't arise anymore, and the mind will be peaceful. Mindfulness, constant mindfulness, means that we will learn to see ourselves better and better. Sati, or mindfulness, the Buddha said, is an upakara dhamma, a dhamma which is of great use or great value. And so we have to increase it in our lives. With mindfulness, then we are able to contemplate the dhamma. It's called dhamma vichayo, contemplating the dhamma with mindfulness. We become very cautious in how we lead our lives. We're no longer heedless, because heedlessness leads to death. We become aware, awake, holy. And we see the difference between a life of awareness and a life led which is bound up with delusion. Somebody who is deluded will always be a slave of craving and a slave of delight. Craving is a very dangerous state of mind. The mind which is craving never knows enough. It's never satiated. The Buddha said, "Nati tanha sama nadi." There's no river like craving. Mindfulness and clear comprehension is what we use in order to abandon moods and thoughts bound up with defilement and craving. And so in time, those states of mind which are obstacles or which prevent inner peace will slowly fade away. And as a result, we'll see the Arya Dhamma, the noble Dhamma, or that state of being a noble one. We'll enter the Arya Vamsa, the noble lineage, which the Buddha said is true contentment with anything. So practicing, we need continual sati, continual mindfulness. We have to train in order to become skilled in it, because if we don't, then we'll always have that feeling, oh, it's so difficult. But it's something we can all do. We all have the capacity to train and increase mindfulness, but it takes great effort. Wiriyo dukkham acchedi means we overcome suffering through effort and energy. Effort and energy, putting forth effort, is a true spiritual quality, and it's something we need to help each other with. So coming together like this is a way of helping foster that in ourselves and in society. The Buddha said the Dhamma will look after somebody who looks after the Dhamma. So practicing Dhamma helps to prevent us from falling into danger, because the Dhamma will look after us. So I'd like to end by expressing my appreciation here for everybody who's come here to study Dhamma and to train their minds. Training by means of trying to understand what is our job, what is our role, our task, in order to carry on walking this journey of life in a more and more wholesome and beneficial way.